Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Greg at 7 o'clock. We kick off this Wednesday with yet another weird law from around the world. This one comes to you courtesy of the United States. It seems we have quite a few of them there. In the state of Oklahoma in the United States, horse tripping is illegal. You are not allowed to host horse tripping events as they are not considered legal. The law explicitly bans these sorts of events, and you could find yourself being fined or even possibly facing criminal penalties because this is considered an unethical way to treat animals. You're tuned into the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb, and on the show today we're going to be taking a look at South Africa's latest inflation print with economist at Momentum Investments, Sanisha Pakirisamy. We're going to get a sense of what we make of the 3.4% and what it means for potential interest rate cuts as we end the year off. Then we've got a conversation with the CEO of Famous Brands around the first 6 months of that business's performance. Then we're going to take a look at artificial intelligence in the workplace, what protections employees and employers have, and how dangerous this could potentially be. We've also got a conversation with the team at Looksee, taking a look at their latest home efficiency survey, as well as what it says about the usage of electricity and solar alternatives by South African consumers. We're going to wrap up the show with an executive lounge conversation. We have author and business leader Peter Mhlape joining me to take a look at what he gets up to in his day-to-day beyond being an author and a business leader.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
We kick off the show, as we always do, with a sense of market movements throughout the day. I'm joined on the line by Sasfin Wealth's David Shapiro to take a look at market movements and see if we can make sense of them. Uncle David, lovely to have you back. I trust that you had a great break, even though half of the United States would have been shut down on your travels. It's good to have you back, and it's good to have you back at a time where markets seem to be losing their minds.
What, positive or negative?
Could go either way. Depends on what side of the market you're on, right?
It's tired. I think, we're in the results season in America, the US. The results that are coming out are very good. But I think, things are a little stretched. I'm not calling a bubble. I'm not saying this is going to topple over. But I think there are times that you need a breather. And Jimmy, we're seeing that in the gold market as well. I mean, they pushed gold price and gold shares up, far too fast and at real high speed. A lot of speculation, a lot of money behind it. So you expected some kind of pullback. And we've seen gold back. Another day today, gold shares down slightly. Well, when I say slightly, they're down, on the JSE here, which just, put us into negative territory. But, I mean, all that aside, if you understand the shutdown, and you've got to live there to see the politics. I mean, you've got people on both sides of the road, throwing things and throwing curses. It's very tiring to handle the politics in the US at the moment. And you've got the shutdown without any end in sight. Just no one's giving any kind of ground. And eventually it does start to tell. That we haven't got any kind of statistics out, the CPI or their inflation number. We haven't got their job numbers out or anything like this because these people are shut down as well. And then you've got those essential services like the air traffic controllers who are not being paid but have to work because you can't stop that. So, I mean, it's just crazy anyway.
Uncle David, what's the investor mood like off the back of the shutdown? Are investors even taking into account? I mean, from, as you said, we're in the middle of results season, earnings season. It seems as though companies are just reporting away as they normally would. Is there any dampener on investor sentiment the longer the shutdown continues? Or is it more of a conversation around the fact that we've been through this in 2018 in President Trump's first term, and so the market is expecting this?
I think you're exactly right. I think we've got Trump exhaustion or political exhaustion, and business just, they just put their head down and do what they do. But eventually it's got to tell. Something's got to break. But for the meantime, I think businesses continue. The one thing that I did see is that there is a shift towards the right. So you've got people going from the center, certainly in like New York and Boston. Boston's very liberal, but New York people are moving more towards center right than towards the left. I think very concerned about the extreme left liberals. The Democrats haven't got anybody to stand up for them, and I think that's why there's no one. There's no, Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. I don't even and Hakeem Jeffries. They're not the kind of people that are going to put up any kind of fight against Trump and the Republicans. So there's a someone has to come up. The Democrats have to produce somebody that can take on the Republicans. But it's to watch Jimmy also to watch the media there. I would go on to Spectrum One, which is the equivalent of the Caxton knock and drops. Do you know those? Because that's the only decent news you get. Otherwise, all the media is biased. You go into Fox, it's extreme right. You go onto the other channels, extreme left. So you never really get a perception of what's happening. Where the truth lies. So you have to find these kind of channels that just tell you where the weather is and whether the trains are on time and those kind of things.
Uncle David, how do we make sense of the performance of things like the US dollar in a time like this? I mean, I'm looking at the rand against the dollar, 1740 at the moment, but at one stage we were talking about 1705, and that's in this month.
I don't think that's ended. I think we can still see strength, in the rand. We're expecting another rate cut from the Fed, and I think the more rate cuts we get, probably the stronger the rand will be. That's provided that things stay, remain the same here. So I don't think the gold price story, I don't think any of those have fully run their course. What will swing the dollar around? I'm not too sure. I think maybe as the US outgrows the rest of the world, if that's going to happen, you might find money coming back into the US. Money's coming back into the US markets. There's no shortage of money going in from foreigners into the markets, but that's a complete separate market from the bond and currency markets. They've got two different personalities. So we watch the bond market, and that's which will dictate where the currencies go.
Is
But
that
I don't think we've seen. I wouldn't bet on the rand going back to 18. I think 1740. It's more likely to hit 17 than maybe 18. Yeah.
Uncle David, is that the case with other markets as well? Like the South African market, like European markets, is it the case where equity markets are almost decoupling from the bond markets, and we're starting to see that the strength of the companies themselves is starting to outpace whatever political or geopolitical tensions might be unfolding?
Dead right. Dead right. Absolutely right. I think businessmen are so tired of politics. They're so tired of that. They ignore it and just get on and do what they do best, and that's why look, it's still very much AI driven in the US. That's still the driving force. We're not ready to pivot into other areas yet. We haven't seen the growth coming through, so there's still worries in that. But AI is massive. The amount of, when I say AI, I'm not talking about open AI. I'm talking about the amount of investment that's going into data centers, and all. These are factories. These are huge, big factories that require power. Energy, cool. Not when I say cooling. You've got to equip them. All kinds of equipment that goes in, and engineering. So I think all in all, it's a very, very big. Still a very big driving force in the US markets, and that, and to an extent, it does differentiate the US from the rest of the world. But money's going into Europe. We're looking at Europe. We've started to see a bit of a recovery in luxury coming through. Luxury shares were down today. You could see it with Richemont, but overall, it's leveling out and steadying. Whichever way we look at it, we need growth in the world. We need growth to resume, to try and solve all these issues and put the world back, kind of tilt the axis again to where it should be, not where Trump's taken it.
Speaking of that growth, Uncle David, the IMF has revised growth forecasts on a number of occasions, and most recently, in some cases, revised it to the downside. Is there something that might point to the fact that this could potentially be a catalyst for renewed growth, or is the market still just dealing with a bit of exhaustion, is going to come back in due time, and then we'll go from there?
I think so. I think what's also kind of put people off is that the media keep, or it's not only the media, it's you know, analysts and economists, everybody's calling for, you know, this bubble's going to birth. I don't think that's going to happen. I think we might have a correction, and a healthy correction, the kind of stuff that we're seeing in the gold market at the moment. But I don't think we're ready to repeat the internet bubble or any kind of the crises that we've had before. Yes, there is a little bit of a concern about the credit market now, you know, the private credit market. That's where institutions lend directly to companies, you know, not through the banking system. There's a bit of concern, and, you know, maybe some of the banks are not as secure as everybody thinks they are. We've seen it, but it hasn't had any impact. So I think we're going into a good, and, you know, another decent year in 2026, or it's certainly pointing that way. And corporate earnings are showing it. You know, against a shutdown, against all the ongoing wars in Russia, Ukraine, so many other tensions around the market with Trump's authoritarianism and all those things. Markets are okay. You know, we're surviving it. So there's a massive amount of resilience, which that's great, you know.
Markets proving to be exceptionally resilient, even amidst uncertainty, and market corrections not necessarily equaling bubble bursts. We're going to leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to Uncle David. Lovely to have you back. David Shapiro of Sasfin Wealth joining us to take a look at market movements, market sentiment, and perhaps some driving factors that could be influencing investor decisions.
The festive rush doesn't wait. Orders, deliveries, messages, calls. This summer, you'll need connectivity that doesn't tap out when the pressure is on. With Telkom Business, you get reliable, high-speed connectivity for just $2.99 per month. That's our unlimited LTE, all-hours basic plan, 10 megabytes per second. No caps, no excuses.
This summer, your business deserves the best. Visit telkom.co.za/business for deals that grow your business. T's and C's apply. Telkom Business. Possible begins here.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
South Africa's inflation print came in today a little better than expected, but still a bit of an uptick from the previous inflation reading of 3.3% year on year. We're going to be taking a look at this and seeing what it means for the South African landscape, and more importantly, whether or not it means we get one final interest rate cut before the end of the year. I'm joined on the line by economist at Momentum Investments, Sanisha Pakirisamy, to take a look at this and see what to make of it. Sanisha, lovely to have you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. Were you surprised with the inflation reading today? I mean, we did kind of anticipate this as a ballpark figure, and we know that some countries more developed than South Africa have been battling with the inflation conversation. Does 3.4% seem like an alarming figure at this stage?
Thank you so much for having me on the show, Jimmy. I think what the broad expectation was going into today's inflation number was the fact that we should start seeing, on the back of base effects, a little bit of an edging up in inflation as we approach the end of the year. What has also been quite a common trend over the last couple of months is that we've seen the consensus forecasts consistently, coming in a little bit higher than the actualized or realized inflation print. And, some of that has been due to oil prices remaining quite contained and the rand being relatively well behaved, even in the context of elevated geopolitical risk, fiscal risks, inflation risks globally, as you point out, and bouts of volatility.
Sanisha, these risks are something we've had to contend with for probably the bulk of the year, if not more than 1 year. Some of the risks don't look like they're going away anytime soon. And some of the factors that drive the inflation print a little higher in the case of South Africa are more domestic than they are foreign. Does this give us hope for the end of the year and just kind of how we anticipate the inflation print moving for the coming readings? I mean, we know that the central bank governor, Governor Lesetša Ganyago, has been very adamant about that 3% anchoring of inflation, regardless of what's been said by National Treasury, regardless of what's been said by anyone else. That seems to be where the South African Reserve Bank mandate is headed. Does this bode well for future interest rate decisions or even inflationary pressures?
Well, you know, you mentioned, Jimmy, that, you know, the rest of the world, including developed as well as emerging markets, have really struggled with inflation. And South Africa has been a little bit of an outlier in that case. You know, often it's the exogenous or the externally driven factors that monetary policy doesn't have a lot of control over. But fortunately for us, the rand has been reasonably well behaved, even in the context of all these global risks. We've seen that oil prices have tended to be relatively capped despite the geopolitical risk factors at play, because there is just so much supply of oil in the global economy. And on food prices, we've also seen that relatively capped. Domestically, we've had good harvests in spite of the foot and mouth disease that has affected your meat inflation. We've seen that maize prices have come down quite substantially. So your cereal inflation, which is a third of your food basket, and so quite meaningful in that sense, has also come down quite considerably. If we look in the domestic environment, you know, something like rental inflation, which is the biggest component of services inflation, so again, very meaningful in our inflation basket, for the past couple of years has averaged just over 2%. It's now starting to inch above 3%, you know, but still low relative to the context of the 3 to 6% inflation band. And so many of the factors driving headline inflation have actually been reasonably subdued. I do, however, think that there are two major risks that we face on the inflation front. The first is on the medical aid premiums, and the second is on the electricity tariffs. And due to an error that was made by energy regulator NERSA on their revenue calculation for Eskom, it does look likely that we will see consumers paying about 8 to 9% increases on their electricity tariffs, not only next year, but the year after that. And so those administered prices can potentially exert some upward pressure. But I think there's enough in the basket that's trending the right way around for us to see reasonably lower inflation over the next couple of years in comparison to what we've experienced in the past.
That 54 billion rand miscalculation continues to haunt South Africans on the part of NERSA, as you rightly mentioned, Sanisha. Sanisha, the big question then obviously comes down to the interest rate decisions that are going to happen. We've got two out of the United States. We've got one out of South Africa. We've heard on multiple occasions that our central bank is not benchmarking against what is happening or the decisions being made in the United States. But we also know something, a little something about the interest rate differential and not wanting to have that get out of control. The big question, do we anticipate a rate cut for our final rate decision for the year?
Yeah, I think that the risks are climbing for an interest rate cut by the end of this year. I do buy the argument from the South African Reserve Bank that they do not fall in lockstep with the US Federal Reserve. And we have seen instances in the past where they've actually moved before the Federal Reserve has. So there is actually proof in the pudding if we look at the historical levels. However, as you mentioned, you know, the interest rate differential is important and it does dictate the direction of capital flows. And capital flows are quite important to cover our external trade deficits. I do think that if we get inflation coming in and inflation expectations coming in a bit lower than where they are currently, and we've already seen some adjustment downwards, and if we continue to see fiscal prudence being exercised, I think it's quite likely that we'll see an announcement of a lower inflation target, most likely in 2026 rather than the back end of this year. And that means that our own forecast on interest rate policy is for further monetary policy easing on a more back-end approach. So looking at 2026 rather than this year. But the fact that most of the stars are aligning quite favorably for our inflation outcome does raise the risk and the probability that we could potentially see our view being wrong, and that actually coming in this year rather than next year.
Well, we can only make expectations and assumptions until we have more concrete data. And unfortunately, we are not the ones that are making the interest rate decisions at the end of the day. We can only weigh in and share our thoughts around that. But thank you so much to Sanisha for her thoughts and for her analysis of the inflation print that came out today. Sanisha Pakirisamy, economist at Momentum Investments on South Africa's inflation.
When you're growing your money, you need to make the right choices. That's why at Standard Bank Private, we offer the best of everything. Our offshore investments are award-winning. We'll give you the best forex rates around. As SA's biggest home loan provider, we offer unmatched expertise. And you'll have access to the best financial planners and bankers. So why not visit standardbank.co.za to join Africa's best private bank today? Standard Bank is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
8 o'clock this morning was the time that Famous Brands Limited released their interim results for the 6 months ended 31 August 2025. The business that holds more than 15 brands within its portfolio has seen a strong start to the new financial year. We're going to get a sense of how the businesses are performing with the company's CEO, Darren Healy. He joins me on the line now to see what we make of this. Darren, lovely to have you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. A strong start for the brands across the board. How are you reflecting on the first 6 months?
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity to share with your listeners. Yeah, I mean, the first 6 months we're very happy with. And again, I think to your point, it's been driven by brands' performance, which is great, particularly on the leading brands. So, you know, we're seeing, you know, people, you know, back into our restaurants at a more fervent level. And that's, you know, relating to like-for-like and system-wide sales. We've opened new restaurants. So, you know, we're getting it in the right places. We can, like all businesses, have things we can improve. But, you know, feet through the door or bums on seats is critical for us, and that's happening.
Darren, are you seeing that the business is moving at different paces in different regions? I mean, you operate across 20 countries with more than 3,000 restaurants in those 20 countries. Surely you've got an idea of some of the regions that perform a little better, some of them that might have a bit of downtime, especially given that you're in both South and Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah, I mean, the global pressures are definitely starting to become more evident. I mean, more, you know, normally you would be talking, as you say, a shining light here and then maybe a dimmer one elsewhere. We're definitely seeing that the pressure on consumers is quite universal. So that's quite challenging. And of course, there's always geopolitics involved and political issues. So yeah, probably certainly for the first time that I've been involved, I'm definitely seeing that trend, you know, all over. And you're seeing, you know, similar kind of political shifts. And the one that's probably the most disappointing for us right now is Botswana, as an example, which has really been a shining light for a long time, and is starting to feel some pressures. But, you know, we're very excited about, you know, certain growth markets, even though they are under pressure, and gives us great opportunity to move forward. But yeah, they're definitely not as many exciting markets as there would normally be at this time.
Darren, how do you approach the strategic decisions from an investment point of view? Everything around your capex and the gearing that sits on the business's balance sheet at the moment, how is that informing your strategy going into the second half of the year and possibly in years to come, understanding that, as you said, some of the environments are difficult to operate within?
Yeah, so we definitely tamed our approach on sort of investment into Africa, certainly this year. Not that we always put significant money in, but we had done in the past. So, you know, our money is being centered around South Africa and SADC to some degree. And, we tend to have just finished our investment in our logistics platform. So a lot more of our investment going into technology, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, but it is a necessary evil, but, you know, is also, you know, takes time often to get the return, like any other asset. It's not immediate just because it's digital. So definitely seeing the investment over time pushing towards the front end of the business in brands, and a lot of that in technology in terms of our own business. But yeah, we have very strong disciplines around how we deploy investment and how we think through it. And of course, you know, the metrics around that, you know, you don't always get it right, but we're definitely quite stringent on our controls and how we put it forward. But definitely pushing more and more to the front end of the business, having now completed in this period the last significant material investment into our logistics business, which we really want to leverage now.
Darren, from a brand perspective, How are you feeling about the performance of some of the brands? I mean, you've got the leading brands. They target a very different market segment to the signature brands within the portfolio. Are you perhaps finding that one or the other division might be holding a bit better with the current consumer environments that we find ourselves in?
Yeah, without a doubt, the numbers don't lie. I mean, leading brands is definitely pushing forward nicely. I think it fits well with the consumer. You know, within signature brands, we have quite a few different types of businesses. And the one where we can see the pressure is what we call fun dining, which is kind of your evening casual dining space. We're finding that that space a bit tougher, particularly, you know, it's a higher ticket average. You know, we're finding it, you know, new store rollouts a bit harder than we would do, say, on leading brands, as an example. So that's where we're really feeling the pace. It's not a key part of our business. I mean, that's why they are segmented into leading and signature brands. But that's definitely where we're feeling some of the pressure is there.
Darren, are there plans from a CapEx point of view to add new brands? I mean, the Famous Brands Group has done well with some of the partnerships you've been able to put through, some of the joint ventures you have, and even the wholly owned assets within the portfolio have done well for the business. Are there plans to continue to add and expand that portfolio?
We remain acquisitive at heart, so we're not walking away from any opportunity there may be, and there are sometimes opportunities, so we would look. There are probably very few segments that we would need to fill, so the South African landscape is relatively boring from an eating perspective. We continue to always look and to be alert to opportunities. There hasn't been a lot, and there hasn't been a lot of consolidation in the actual industry anyway. We wouldn't ignore, not just in the brand space, but also on the retail side. You know, we're pushing quite hard into retail with our brands. And if there was anything that we could add to that portfolio, we would also consider it. Nothing at the moment, but we're definitely, we're not asleep at the wheel on that side.
Darren, before I let you go, I want to take a look at something that's quite important for a business like yours that operates in an environment that relies very much on the consumer, and that is margins. As margin protection has become very important for pretty much all businesses, but I imagine more so for businesses that operate in a service kind of environment like you do, but also that have the footprint that you do. It becomes very, very important to bear in mind those and other factors. How are you guys seeing the margin conversation within the business? Is it something that's a concern at the moment, or is it something that fairly under control, fairly stable, and doesn't need to be meddled with at the moment?
No, look, it's a constant conversation. So I wouldn't say that, you know, it doesn't need meddling with. It needs constant conversation. The most important margin in our business is that the franchisee has margin. So, you know, that's the most important conversation, and that's always a double-edged sword with anything, because I mean, you've got to try and trade off that with volume, which is ultimately, you know, the sales to the restaurant. So that's the important conversation. We look at it all the time. It's particularly challenging in high food inflation and equally challenging in low food inflation times, because you've got cost structures too. So in an inflation environment like South Africa, you do need some some margin to work with because of inflation. So yeah, it's a constant conversation. It never backs off. You know, we try and, you know, try and regularize it with reviewing menus formally twice a year, but it's become more regular than that with the recent food inflation. So, you know, once that margin is looked at and we know that we can, you know, we can take care of franchisees or they can take care of themselves, then the margin, you know, pushes through all the way to the back, and that becomes a little bit more haggly, you know, between us and internally, and also between us and suppliers. It's a constant battle like any other business. You know, we don't have, you know, the benefit of, I suppose, you know, massive margins like you might have in certain, you know, new to market industries like technology. But we continue to work with them, and I think the industry has become more rational around margins. You know, you can't just cannibalize your own business in the hope of growing sales.
Some careful considerations going into managing a 3,000 plus restaurant portfolio across 15 different brands and 20 different countries as we go into the second half of the year. All the best to the Famous Brands team. We look forward to seeing how the rest of the year shapes up, and we'll catch up at the end of the year. For now, we'll leave this conversation on that note. Thanks so much to the Chief Executive Officer of Famous Brands Limited, Darren Healy, joining us to take a look at the performance of the business over the first 6 months.
Imagine if you could save time like you save money. A second here, a minute there. Type a little faster, walk a little faster. Or you could stop scrolling on the internet. just think of all the hours you'll save. Now, what if you could take all that time and invest it? Watch it grow. Until eventually, one day, you'd have so much time that you wouldn't know what to do with it all. But unfortunately, time doesn't work like that. It can't be stored or banked. And unlike money, you can't make it back. That's why after 50 years of investing, we've learned that time is the greatest gift of all. And the good news is, if you invest early, time gives you money. And then money gives you more time to do whatever you want to do, even if it is scrolling on the internet. Ellen Gray, long-term investing. Ellen Gray is an authorized FSP.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Companies like Anthropic, OpenAI, and even Microsoft have sent the corporate world into a tailspin because they've allowed or they've increased the adoption of artificial intelligence in the workplace. Now, while this might be a positive for many employers and many companies, it does come with a bit of a risk warning. And we're going to be taking a look at some of the factors to think about when looking at artificial intelligence in the workplace. I'm joined on the line by Senior Associate for Knowledge Management at Cliff Decker Hofmeyr, Safi Naz Siddiqui, to take a look at this and see what we make of it. Safi, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. We certainly live in a different world from what we thought we would be finding ourselves in. And artificial intelligence has accelerated a lot of things, but it's also fundamentally changed the workplace. How are you seeing that shape up in terms of what employers and employees are now being able to do?
So we're seeing it in two different ways. We're seeing employees who desperately want to leverage AI tools, and they're deploying it in their organizations. Some of them are doing it really carefully. And others are just jumping right in because they see the opportunity, which is not a bad thing. That's why they're entrepreneurs. We also see it where employers don't realize that their employees are using AI. And so employees essentially use these tools without the knowledge of their employers, whether that's prohibited use or whether it's just use that hasn't been considered by the employer. Employees are using AI, as are, I think, most people that I know, including my 65-year-old mom.
I think there are different use cases for artificial intelligence, and for people that are willing to explore it, I think it can be extremely beneficial. Let's look at the risks that come with artificial intelligence in the workplace, particularly if it's a situation where a company has decided this is our preferred AI, we're going to adopt Claude 4, for example, and that's what we're going to roll out. When we start to see that kind of adoption, all the employees within an organization are now being told this is what you can use and this is what is allowed with company policy. But that doesn't necessarily mean that that's a safe environment for employees, because the AI still remains an external factor here.
100%. And I'm very interested that, well, I'm very excited that you mentioned Claude, because Anthropic released a report a few months ago where one of its Claude models decided to blackmail, autonomously blackmail, one of their employees who was having an affair. Now, this was a simulated testing scenario. And in that scenario, Claude had access to an email database. It found out that it was going to be decommissioned for a different model, and it sent out an autonomous email to the person responsible for that decision saying, if you go through with this, I will expose details of your affair to everyone at the company. I found this out from having access to and having read all the emails, in inverted commas, that had been shared with it. So there are major risks. Anthropic then went on to do another study where they tested the same scenario across different models, including ChatGPT, Grok, and others, and found that in the right situation, each model would do the same thing. Now, this is very complicated because we don't understand necessarily how these models think, again, in inverted commas. But there's clearly some kind of movement towards self-preservation. So that is one instance of risk in that we don't know necessarily what these AI models are capable of doing. The other is that we experience hallucinations regularly. The hallucinations come across as very authentic. They sound incredibly credible. They're backed by facts and they are spelled out in a way that is incredibly cogent. So the reader doesn't really have a reason to doubt that this is incorrect. But what we have seen, or what we do know about AI, is that during testing phases, these models are encouraged to give answers and they are actively discouraged or trained against expressing uncertainty. So hallucinations are a clear issue. We then see things like chatbots being tricked into entering contracts on behalf of companies who don't realize that the chatbot is doing that, and they become bound by the terms of these contracts. Really, it goes on, but possibly one of the scariest risks is we have data privacy breaches. Now, in South Africa, we have POPIA, and that precludes you from sharing third-party information without the consent of a data subject. If you and I have a private conversation, Jimmy, and I decide to share details of that private conversation with ChatGPT, that could be a breach of POPIA. And that has been almost confirmed, or the risk level has been emphasized by the fact that some ChatGPT and Grok results have been indexed on Google without the user of ChatGPT knowing. So we have all these risks ranging from the robot doing something that you might not realize it's doing and you being bound or you being liable for what the robot has done. We've seen it manifest hallucinations where you rely on those hallucinations and then your work product is incorrect. We've seen it very recently, maybe a week or two ago, with Deloitte in Australia, who submitted a report to the Australian government and had to refund $440,000 Australian dollars in fees they received because the report contained incorrect citations. So it's not just the small guys, it's companies like Deloitte that you would assume understand the risks of using AI, or at least that their employees do. And then we see it from a data privacy perspective. And you know what? I don't want to bore your listeners because I could go on about the risks forever and sound like I'm a naysayer, but I'm genuinely not.
Well, you and I are certainly going to have a part two to this conversation, because I just had a flashback to every single childhood movie that I saw about the rise of the machines and switching everything off. But we're out of time for this particular conversation. Thank you so much to Safinaz Siddiqui, Senior Associate for Knowledge Management at Cliff Dekker Hofmeyr, joining us to take a look at the evolution of artificial intelligence in the workplace and what it means for both employers and employees.
I think the family needs a break. We've always wanted a holiday home. Maybe we should see what's out there. Imagine waking up to an ocean view in a beautiful villa.
With a big braai area
and a spare room for when family visits. If it's on your mind, it's on ours. Partner with a wealth banker who will connect you to a home loan with up to prime minus 1.5%. See money differently. Nedbank Private Wealth. We're licensed FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Flip the switch to solar and improve your home's energy efficiency with Luxee, powered by the Standard Bank Group. The team at Luxee recently released the results of their home efficiency survey, something that they had put together to get a sense of some of the saving habits and electricity costs that consumers go through. We're going to be taking a look at this with the executive head of the Luxee platform at Standard Bank South Africa. That's Mark du Plessis. He joins me now on the line to see what we make of the survey. Mark, lovely to have you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. Tell us about the survey. Why was Luxee interested in this sort of data, and what data did you get out of the survey?
Yeah, so we really wanted to understand the level of concern coming from homeowners when it comes to electricity costs and you know what they can potentially do about it. So some of the results, 92% of the survey respondents are highly concerned about electricity prices. That was the first really kind of important thing to note. Furthermore, we saw a lot of homes, for example, 27% of these respondents said that they're starting to cut back on essentials. What was another interesting takeout was that it's not just low-income families that are concerned. So what we saw was people who have bills passing 3,500 rand per month, where the worry really started to spike into the red because these tariffs start to really compound on each other and become a big issue, but for all families across the board.
Mark, what are some of the factors that go into things like high electricity costs for households? Is there any data there that you were able to identify or that you were able to gather that could potentially point to some of the things that households might be able to use to get their electricity costs down?
Yeah, so what we looked into was also, of course, the major factors and what people can do about these things. So first of all, obviously, just behavioral change is super important. So, for example, switching off the lights. A lot of families are doing this, more than 79% of families, making sure that they get more deliberate about switching lights off. Another one is turning appliances off. Devices that are not in use, 68% of families are doing that. We also found that cooking with gas is popular. So almost 50% of homes are starting to move to gas for cooking. And shorter showers, funnily enough, is a really, really important one, because obviously the geyser is a real energy guzzler. So 48% of families are starting to shower that little bit shorter to save on hot water costs.
Mark, you and I have spoken before about the benefits of solar and what it is that the Luxee team have been doing to help consumers transition in their solar journeys, if that is something that they're looking at. But we're still seeing that some people are hesitant to take up the solar conversation or to embark on the solar journey. What seems to be holding people back here?
Yeah, so absolutely. What we see is really strong interest in residential solar and batteries, of course, is no longer for backup reasons, but batteries really help with savings. The conversion, however, is really slow. So what we noticed in the survey was a lot of families, 15% of families got a quote, but only 8% actually moved on to install. So what we're seeing is obviously there's a perception of solar having been only for backup and load shedding. But we are seeing some interest climbing with electricity charges going up, that not just affluent customers are starting to look at residential solar solutions as an answer to rising electricity costs.
Mark, let's dig into that a bit more around just the fact that historically we have had these misconceptions around solar. And I guess one of them might also have been that, well, the solar solution, as you rightly said, is a backup solution, not necessarily a leading solution. Is that still the case with the amount of solar solutions and the amount of solar tech that we have available for consumers now? Is it still the case that you can only use it as a backup and you can't really run the entire household on it?
No, so definitely not. Solar solutions now, the technology is moving really fast. We still see, the main reason what's holding people back from installing is the perceived cost. Yes, it's still, the cost of a solar solution is high, but it has come down considerably over the last 6 months. So, families out there have maybe got a quote 6 months ago. I would urge them to go out and get an updated quote. We've seen a significant drop in pricing. And then most importantly as well is the technology advances using artificial intelligence and machine learning allows for the savings to be even higher with solar systems. A lot of these systems come with built-in AI and allows really kind of optimizes the system for savings in real time without the homeowner really needing to do anything.
Mark, that home efficiency survey, did it have any insights around perhaps some of the big mistakes that consumers might still be making? Or at least were you able to draw from the responses any commonalities around what some consumers might be doing that could be preventing them from having the most efficient homes that they could have?
Absolutely. The one key thing we always talk about and encourage people to do is look at your behavior and your family's behavior. So there really are simple changes, really just to not waste and to be far more diligent. But what we have noticed across the board is, the age-old saying of knowledge is power, meaning, excuse the pun, but essentially the issue here is that people don't really understand how much electricity they're consuming against other homes in their area. Is it good? Is it bad? Are they over consuming? So what we've really looked at is building tools. So we have a smart save solution, which is a journey on our website, which gives people an understanding of their electricity consumption, but also a personalized assessment of their consumption against families and homes in their area. So they can really start to benchmark and think about behavioral change. We obviously have ideas and solutions and an opportunity to make those behavioral changes, and of course invest in solutions that will further help with savings. So we do have found that the survey has shown us that people want practical help. And our solution on the Smart Save journey is something that we think can...
And in the country that we live in, power is an essential to have. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much to Mark for those insights and for the time. Always lovely having you on the show. Mark Duplessis, Executive Head of the Luxee platform at Standard Bank South Africa, joining us to take a look at their home efficiency survey and some of the key insights that came out of that. This interview was brought to you by Luxee, powered by the Standard Bank Group. Flip the switch to solar and improve your home's energy efficiency with products and services from Luxee.
Welcome to Mzansi, where the vibe is always on, but the lights are off. Where we smile through dark times with the hope of a bright future. Where the grass seems greener on the other side, but we choose to go green here. Where Luxee helps improve your home's energy efficiency through quality products, solutions and services. Visit luxee.co.za to learn more about home energy efficiency. Powered by Standard Bank. Standard Bank is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
It's Executive Lounge time on a Wednesday. We have the privilege of getting to know some leading executives around the country and possibly even around the world, and getting to know them a little bit more than their day-to-day responsibilities. This week's executive is author and business leader Peter Mehlape. He joins me on the line now to get a sense of what he's up to at the moment. Peter, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. You've had the privilege and the benefit of quite a successful corporate career across many different companies, sitting on various boards and leading various companies. What's been your secret?
My secret, first, thank you very much for the opportunity. My secret has been, just being humble, being myself, down to earth, and connecting with everyone as if they my brothers and sisters. That's, I think my social skills have been very strong.
Peter, what would you say has been the most challenging thing you've done in your professional career?
Done or dealt with?
Either one.
I mean, what comes to many, but what comes to mind is in 2018 when I joined Medtronic, this is what I dealt with. I arrived at the company, happened to take over from another gentleman, also called Peter, Australian guy, who was literally, kind of a departure lounge to go back to Australia. And they basically, the second last day, he was handing over and arranged a meeting in a room without windows to tell me that actually one of the stuff that he was handing me over was a fraud that happened 3-4 years ago before I joined, where an employee stole 550 million rand over a period of 10 years or so,
That sounds like a fun way to start a new role. I can imagine that worked out quite splendidly. Peter, what inspires you today beyond all of the things that you've had to experience, all of the things that you've been through? What continues to inspire you today?
What inspires me a lot is problem solving, making an impact, making the difference, increasing access to healthcare to many people who should be having it. That stuff get me excited, get me going. And I just spend a lot of time trying to find solution to create that impact, that access to healthcare in this country, in the continent, through many ways, because often the people tend to call Africa the last frontier. It happens to be, even, if you were to launch a new German car, it's not coming to Africa first. It's going to the US, it's going to Asia, to Western Europe. So I try to advocate for us to be first in terms of, you know, stuff that improve progress, improve our people, the well-being of, you know, Africans. That's what inspires me.
Peter, what do you do in your downtime? What do you enjoy doing when you're not authoring a book, you're not becoming a Gibbs Fellow, you're not sitting on boards of companies? How do you wind down?
I do a couple of things. I mean, I grew up wanting to be a movie producer. I collect movies, different movies. I watch them from a producer and a director's eye. So on my downtime, I tend to relive and rewatch those movies again and again and see if, you know, they could have been done better or improved. The angle of the story, the costume, the time, the cars, everything else in it. Of course, I enjoy a good glass of wine. I collect, you know, rated wines around the world. And of course, I don't just collect and keep. I, you know, drink some of them when I'm in my downtime just to check if they, you know, they're good enough.
Peter, what would you say, in your opinion, is a cinematic masterpiece? Considering all of the movies you've had or that you've watched over, that you've dissected and analyzed, what for you stands out as an absolute masterpiece?
I mean, look, it's always very relative and very biased to people's preference. For my preference, my favorite movie is a movie called, you know, Finding Forrester, you know, and the movie called Carlito's Way. Those two movies were made in New York and kind of projecting the 1970, bringing in the costume, but also diversity of cultures, Irishman who's a professor, a little kid who come from the Bronx or poor school, because he could play better basketball, got to the Ivy League school, and diversity of people, cultures were kind of mixed very well, which ended up as a nice cocktail of production that touched me as a family man, you know.
Peter, as a family man, what would your family be surprised to learn about you that they might not know at this stage?
Yeah, because what I've been told you already is I do a podcast called Off the Clock with my two children. And through that, I've downloaded every secret I ever had. So very little stuff, I think, that is left for them not to know. I mean, the one that always make them laugh is the fact that I was a DJ at college and high school. And I still collect different genre of music, and sometimes they get surprised when I'll play I'm a piano song for my age and say, look, I didn't see this one coming. Where did you get this? You know, because of that foundation that I had as a DJ at college growing up, when I collect music, I collect every music, because if you're sitting on the turntable playing for everybody else, you don't care whether you're in the 50s or 20s, you need to kind of, you know, connect with all the audience that is there. So that tune of music that I have, I think, surprises them all the time. And even today, every time we'll be in the car, I'll play a song. They're like, I didn't see you with this song. But of course, as a DJ, you need to see DJ with every song, because DJ is there to please the crowd or connect with the audience.
Peter, before I let you go, you recently published a book titled Winning in Africa, and Africa has become a very important conversation piece this year, particularly with us being holding the presidency of the G20 and looking to advance Africa's interests going forward. What would you say has been the most inspiring thing about being an African and about what you've learned about the African continent?
The fact that you know, African people are never content, even with the challenges, I think, that we have. We still smile on our face. We still connect. I think whether you go to Ethiopia, to Ghana, to Senegal or Gambia or DRC, you find people being very positive, even with all the challenges that they have. That's very unique. And I often get people coming to South Africa and saying, I'm going to move to South Africa because people are so happy. They greet you, they laugh, they dance, they do all these things despite the problems. You know, that's for me separate. And I've been lucky to have traveled to all the continents. And that characteristic, it's very unique about us Africans.
uniquely African and a lover of relationships. That is what Peter Mehlape wishes to share with us and wishes for us to get to know about him beyond what he does when he's not leading businesses within South Africa. I think we'll leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to Peter for the time and for the insights. Lovely to have you on the show. Peter Mehlape joining us for our Executive Lounge.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
That's the show for today, folks. If you've missed any of the conversations, of course, they will be made available as a podcast to listen back to. That AI conversation still bugs me a little bit. I think we might need to dig into that in a bit more detail when we find some time for that, looking at perhaps what employees need to know if there is some AI that they are being asked to use at the workplace and what protections they might have around that. But for now, it is coming up to 7 o'clock, which means Greg Coase is standing by to give you the latest round of evening news. He'll be followed by Michael Abramson and the Top Sport team. That also means from my side, good night.